Hi, I'm Derek.
And hi, I'm Darren, and you're listening to Revolt Lab,
a podcast about changing what we do in education. And hello to our revolutionaries out there. We're so glad that you joined us again. We're Darren and I happy to have you back with us as we continue this podcast in Black and White to talk about things that have to change, need to change in education for us to serve our learners better. And in order to do that, we're having a spectacular guest, a great friend. He's a pain in the butt a lot of times, but he is always the student advocate that you want to have with you, and that's our good friend Glenn Robbins. Glenn, how are you doing today, man?
I am great, gentlemen. Thanks for having me.
So Glenn, for those, there are probably like two or three people out there who don't know who you are. So if you don't mind, would you talk to those two or three people, tell them a little bit about yourself, where you are, and your journey on getting there?
Well, first and foremost, I'm just blessed and honored to know you guys and given this opportunity just to talk to you guys and catch up, and we're going to have fun with this, I hope. Been a former teacher, coach, varsity coach, I should say, assistant coach, assistant principal at the middle school level, and now currently a superintendent. And I'm located in New Jersey and right now at an incredible district in Brigantine, New Jersey, right outside of Atlantic City. So, and I've always been in New Jersey throughout my career, and, you know, I'm extremely blessed for all the things that have come through my career and the people I've gotten to meet, such as yourselves, and continue to look forward to meeting new people. So.
All good. Okay, thank you. We appreciate that. So, so Glenn, that's a great synopsis of your career bio, a good curriculum vitae for us, and we appreciate that. But I'm going to ask the first question, and this is we use this question as a good way for people to get to know Glenn on a personal level. All right. So, Glenn, tell us who were you, who are you, and who you hope to be.
Ooh, you're going deep right away. All right. So,
that's how revolutionaries do.
That's right. So, who was I? I was a product of a blue-collar family, born and raised into a multi-generational well-drilling family. First individual in my entire family to get my master's degree, and currently working towards my doctoral. We'll see how that goes. But, you know, I've had many successes in that time and throughout the my life, and I attribute it to, you know, hard work. I attribute it to that background of who I was and who I am. You know, and I've changed a lot. It's like that old philosophy statement where you can't step in the same river twice because you're not always the same person twice. So you're constantly evolving. That's something that I've always tried to adjust to. You know, you can, it's a younger age, you're at a cockier stage, and you're trying to do things for confidence building. But as you go through life, you're learning, but there's so much more to learn. There's so much more than just yourself, and it's all about giving back and helping others grow. And I think that's something that I've really gathered over the years, and, you know, and looking at it from a lens of an educational person as well as a father, you know, as well as just a different kind of divergent thinker. So when I look at the way schools are and how they are, why they are, I want to question that. And then I look at it from the father lens that, you know, would I want my own children to be in that particular class, whether it's physically or virtually right now, you know, or in that particular school setting. And, you know, so I look at those and say, how is education right now and how can it continue to evolve and how can I help in that? You know, I'm just a small piece in this giant machine, but how can I throw, you know, some different ideas to maybe reshape that machine in some way to give more student voice, to, you know, scale learning on a completely different level, to scale leadership on a completely different level, you know, and ultimately try to leave something behind, you know, my time is coming on, you know, so I think it's about building somewhat of a better place for our future children and our future leaders.
All right. So I remember, I don't know how long ago it was, maybe 5 years ago when you and I got introduced through Travis Lape. And I remember the first couple conversations.
Oh, boy.
because I found out right away that, you know, this was someone I wanted in my growth leader category. So I have, even on Twitter, I have a feed that's just growth leaders. Because our conversation, I thought I was pushing the envelope on some things until I talked to you. And you talked about your ed camp that you were doing with kids in your middle school. I had you talk with some of my teachers. We've had conversations while you're going to the dentist office because you want to be that accessible to be able to talk about these things. So my main question is, well, why? I mean, where does this passion come from? Not only to connect with anyone and everyone, but to push the envelope, because was it 2 years ago, I think you and I started, we just dug into this conversation on, hey, how can we get kids to produce AI, artificial intelligence, the coding, everything that goes with it? And I don't think many people have that conversation, but what drives you to do that?
So great questions. And yeah, I always appreciated our conversation, Darren. And guess what? It's right back at you because you started pushing me even more. And I think that's the joy of it. And I think ultimately, you know, I love the author, Ryan Holiday, probably far above my top author. And I loved his book, Ego is the Enemy. You know, that spoke to me in so many different ways. So, you know, understanding that when leadership, you got to check your ego at the door, you know, because when you walk in, it's still a human being. And look at it in today's society. You're seeing values and belief systems that are completely outdated and being exposed for so many wrong things right now, now that everybody is virtual. And there's, you know, there these type of leaders are being exposed in some way. These type A leaders are struggling. You know, a leader that I look forward to is someone that doesn't always have all the answers, but it's going to be open, honest, and, you know, and compassionate in ways. Say, hey, I can't figure it out, but I'm going to find a way to try to get it better for you. And I think that's something we have to do as far as like leadership in itself. Like I mentioned earlier about scaling that type of leadership. I think we're still getting these types of leaders to coming out that they still believe they have to have all the answers. It's still top down. There needs to be a relationship from the bottom up and top down and somewhere in that middle, and understanding that you're a human being, you know, so that compassion and grace and empathy should always be at the forefront of any conversation. You know, there's something that you're doing in, you know, in your school district or what Derek is doing in his or people are doing elsewhere that can be such a value to all these other children. And like I mentioned earlier, as a father, you know, and as an educational leader, why wouldn't we want the best possible scenario for our children? You know, there was a quote out there from one of the top people, I think it was one of the CEOs, he mentioned that your skill set is obsolete in 2 years. You know, and thinking about that more and more, think about that right now, the skill set you have before this whole pandemic shut down pretty much everything, especially in our area, you know, that skill set before, what is it going to be moving forward? You know, and did we properly prepare our children for what this new world is going to be? Like we talked about AI before, we talked about automation before, how things are starting to take over. You know, and I still believe there's going to be a major human element involved. You know, AI is not as involved as everybody hopes or thinks it would be by now. We don't have a human, we don't have the Jarvis in our households. But I think it's like constantly pushing, like, the cars that we're driving today, most of them have some kind of self-guidance in a way. What will that look like, you know, as we continue forward? What does automation look like now? Now that this pandemic has sped things up, what does that look for, you know, my daughter? You know, what does that look for my son in years to come? You know, you're seeing all these great educational pieces being put out there, and that's something we've always seen before, you know, and it's amazing that people are finally realizing, well, if I was connected with somebody, I'd be so much more advanced in these different lessons or different ideas that we've had. I think that's the joy that we've had for all these years. We were trying to be progressive. We were trying to think of different ways to evolve. And we kept pushing ourselves to do that. Because I think it's like that what if and yes and how might we create something that truly educates a child for their future, not ours, you know, not our past, what we're used to in that skill set. So I think that's been the fun part of it, seeing that self-exploration, seeing the student voice, seeing the, you know, the student driven. You know, there's nothing better when we're guiding a kid and saying, all right, what's your purpose in life? And let's put together a project that you want to market, to sell, to just help out, whatever it may be, to better the lives of others. And that, to me, has meant so much, you know, so from our conversation. So, like I said, I think it's just, like I said, mentioned earlier, pushing the ego to the side, you know, realizing that you don't have all the answers, and imagining the wildest sci-fi questions or videos you've ever watched and said, how could this be in the future? Because whatever we design, designs us back. You know, so why aren't our kids designing something right now that we're in this situation? You know, and Robert Greene says it the best. We have a live time and dead time. And I think it's been more forefronted now because of this whole pandemic. And are you sitting at home and watching, you know, your dead time and you're vegging out on Netflix? Or are you actually doing something productive and meaningful to better the lives of your others or yourselves, or do something, come out of this with different skill sets? And it's almost like, well, why weren't we doing that already? You know, or social emotional learning. Why weren't we doing that already? I know we were, you know, because we believe in that whole child. We believe and understanding that that's true data right there, that that kid's home life and the things that are going on behind the scenes that you cannot conceptualize from a test. But think about that. Why weren't we doing those things? And I think that's been part of the drive, is trying to have a better future for them, you know, and completely forgetting about our narcissistical selves for a moment.
So this is why I love talking to Glenn. I mean, we could literally just drop the mic and just close everything down right there. This is why I love.
And I went all over the place on that question.
Right. So, so to the revolutionary learners out there, Glenn, I first met Glenn three, four, whatever, X amount of years ago. You know, I don't know if you remember, we walked to the, hold on. But let me, before I'm getting ahead of myself, you mentioned empathy and compassion earlier in your talk. And I want to get to that point because I want to talk about some of the work that, some of the extraordinary work that you're having to do right now in your district and the decisions you've made as a superintendent to help support your families. So I want to come back to that part.
Okay.
But to our listeners listening right now, if you just heard Glenn, he referenced, I mean, 6-8 books. Just a bunch of learnings, a bunch of things that he's done. When I first met Glenn, he walked me, he and I got lunch and we left a conference something and walked somewhere so I could have some lunch. You didn't even eat, so I could have lunch. And we started talking and Glenn's like, yeah, I'm a voracious reader. I was like, yeah, you know, I read too. You know, everybody reads, whatever. But I've come to find out that Glenn is such a voracious reader, just a committed learner. Glenn, and I know that this is a slight bird walk. Please talk to us about, because I know that this is special. You don't read a lot of education books. Talk to us about what you read and why you read that and how it impacts your career as an educator.
I remember that walk all too familiar. And I'll be honest with you, part of that walk was I had never met you before, but I, you know, I've read of your work, I've seen your work, so I envied you, and I still do. And I wanted to learn more from you. So that was part of my reading right there. I was trying to read about what made you tick and what made you, your drives and your passion and your purpose. So I wanted to get to know you more. And I think that's something I try to do with everyone. I'm very intrigued on what makes people tick and what, you know, what is their background? What is their strength and beliefs? But to your question about books and posts and anything that I can get my hands on is that, you know, I'm looking for a deeper skill set. I'm looking for, you know, the leadership area. I'm looking not only for like self-help, but for helping others. You know, like we think about that. Like you go into, you know, years ago, we used to go into a bookstore like Borders or Barnes and Nobles, and it had a giant sign and it'd be like, self-help. And then you really wouldn't see like helping others section. You know, why was that? You know, and I looked at that as I've evolved throughout leadership, and I've been blessed to have some amazing mentors. And let's face it, I've had some rather difficult time with leadership as well coming up. And I wanted to continue to grow, and I wanted to figure out why people were doing certain things some ways. So, you know, I mentioned earlier like Robert Greene and Ryan Holiday, you know, and you mentioned John Maxwell and John Gordon, you know, but you know, what else is out there that you're looking into and reading? You know, like, you know, Peter Diamandis just put out The Future Is Now. The future is faster than you think. And think about that. Like, I was listening to that, and then this whole pandemic hit, and it's like, holy cow, now it's even here, even faster. Everything is automated. Now everybody's getting stuff delivered. Like, you know, we were talking about like Uber before, and then they were talking about aviation Uber and all these other things. Think about how much has evolved just in over a month and a half that we've been home quarantined. And what will that launch forward to? So I'm always intrigued about, you know, different leadership styles and what makes his people tick. You know, being a historian kind of a guy, I've always appreciated, like, try to dig into the former rulers. Like, that old saying, like, it's all been done before. You know, so when we pound our heads and then you start looking at, like, Stoic philosophy, or you start looking at rulers from, you know, ancient Chinese or the Greeks or the Romans and all that, they've all gone through very similar situations we have as leaders. And it's like, how did you get through it? You know, why did you get through it? And in a way to try to coach myself, but ultimately it's to try to help produce and grow other leaders. Like, that's my goal, I think, as I continue moving forward. Is, you know, my goal is when I leave, I want to have a group of leaders that's flourishing more than ever. I don't want to build soldiers, you know. And I think that's an easy way of leadership. You're putting together soldiers and they're told what to do always. I want people to sit in the room with me and push back against me and say, well, why can't we do it this way? You know, I think there's a collective group, and I read a lot recently. One of my favorite books that I put right to the top of the shelf right now is General Stanley McChrystal's Team of Teams. You know, you're talking about VUCA times. You're talking about, you know, volatile, uncertainty, complexity, you know, and ambiguous times, and how leadership has to come together more than ever, instead of bottlenecking it up through the top. So, you know, think about that right now. Think of everybody that's remote. Think of everybody that's in on Zoom call or Google Meet or Teams. You know, how are you encouraging your team as they continue to grow forward? How are you working with that? So, you know, watching videos about leadership in remote, reading books about how they deal with different types of organizations that are not always in a singular room. So it's like, once again, it's constantly evolving. This is the world we're living in. And if you don't adapt, what happens? You know, I think everybody knows the answer to that. So once again, I took you on a long-winded answer, Derek, and I'm sorry about that, but I'm very intrigued about, you know, what can we do to better ourselves and each other?
So, no, you didn't. So I want to share with everybody that after that conversation, before that, I was, you know, I'm a reader, and all of us here are readers. But you know, most of my stuff, 99% of my stuff was education, you know, that kind of thing. And if it wasn't education, it was comic books. That's just who Derek McCoy is. But that talk struck me. That talk, it really struck me. And I started looking out for other things. And from that talk, ego is the enemy. Remember that? That was the first book that I read and took from that conversation. So I do appreciate that, and I did want our leaders, our learners out there, to hear that piece, because, you know, there are some great education books. You know, The Revolution is a great education book, but it's not. There's a bigger world out there. There's a bigger world out there, and we grow from stretching out. So. Just some encouragement to just keep stretching out, keep reading, keep growing, and then connect. You know, it's not just reading, it's connecting, and then having, Glenn, I love what you said earlier. It's not about sitting in a room with somebody who agrees with you. You know, you got to build that diverse team. Anyway, long-winded. Glenn, I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier. Compassion, empathy, and it reminded me of when we talked a couple of weeks ago. Your area, you know, I know, well, we don't, the our listeners will realize that you're close to, you know, a hotspot.
Yeah, so we're in New Jersey, hotspot, you know, starting to come more towards the south than it was in the north. But we're right outside of Atlantic City, literally the next island over. And, you know, we have a lot of families that work in PA, and some grew up in New York and so forth. And we have a lot of families that work in the casino industry or something along those industry with the gig economy, whatever it may be. You know, so my community is absolutely amazing and resilient. But, you know, one of the concerns we had was once the casinos shut down, then are they furloughed? Are they unemployed? You know, are they getting, you know, food? Are they getting unemployment checks, which is somewhat of a nightmare, for lack of better terms, right now in New Jersey for people trying to sign up and get their payments and trying to help their families out. It's rather sad. And then we also have families who are sitting in, you know, several mile lines hoping to get donations of food, you know, for because they work in the casino industry or something else. So, you know, there's a lot on the mind of, you know, being a leader in the type of area that we are, you know. And it's also too that we have to understand that, you know, we have families and friends and people who are affected by this virus some way or another, and we got to be mindful of that, you know. So there's a lot on the shoulders right now of any leader that's going through this, particularly in the Northeast. So
yeah, that's right. So in response to that, you have led some conversations, led some efforts to support your families. Share with us some of the things that you've done.
Yeah, so, you know, right from the get-go, about 2 weeks before we were talked about possibly shutting down, we called a team of team meetings. And look, there it is, a reference again, right? So we called a team of team meetings where we had the top stakeholders come to the school. And we sat down 2 weeks before, and then again, 1 day before our last day physically, and we sat down with all the chiefs and city manager, you know, the administration, and we talked about, and obviously the board members involved who have been amazing, our city council, our mayor, you know, all these individuals. And we all said, all right, egos aside, what are we most worried about a month from now, 2 months from now, 3 months from now, you know, if we had to go this far? How do we do food services? How do we help these families out? And, you know, we came up with a bunch of different great ideas, and obviously a lot has changed and a lot has evolved. It seemed like every 24 hours was a brand new world that we were living in each day, and we woke up, kept evolving to such a rapid pace that, you know, it was tiresome. But having all those individuals together made it extremely easier. But we also came to a collective vision and a collective goal and, you know, what we were going to do to work for going together. So, you know, one of the things when this first started happening was, how are we going to feed the families and, you know, who gets it? So we have a higher rate of, we're a Title I school, and we have, you know, the free and reduced students. So we put together our plan for delivery if they needed, as well as pickup. And then from there, we also, before the kitchen staff could even touch the food, we had them being temperatures taken, as well as questioning them, you know, just to make sure that they, you know, didn't have any types of symptoms that may result into corona, so we weren't spreading that even more. And then as it evolved, we got closer to our spring break, and New Jersey is usually right before and or after Easter. And at the time, so much was evolving, you know, we didn't know what was going on. There was always that hope that we maybe go back to school. And one of the things that, you know, was not resolved at the time was, if you closed physically and virtually, you could not serve meals. So think about that. Like, you don't serve meals on the weekends, you don't serve it on holidays or snow days. So, you know, we hadn't gotten any guidance in that regard yet. And one of the conversations I had with our administration and our staff was, if we close school physically and virtually the week after Easter, and we now say, sorry, you don't have, you know, money coming in because of the unemployment. Like I said, we don't know who's got what going on at home. There's so many uncertainties. And oh yeah, by the way, good luck fending for yourself getting food. I was like, I couldn't live with myself, and I don't think anybody could if we did that, because, you know, we'd say, well, you know, we deserve the spring break. Well, New Jersey, you're locked down, so you're not going anywhere. So I'm the biggest proponent for mental health there is, SEL. Everybody knows that nonstop, but we had to serve every family, and that was our biggest concern. We didn't want to leave them behind. So of course we closed for Good Friday. We stay closed for Easter Monday, but then we revamped our days to serve food on Thursday and Friday of that week, so everybody could have it. And my staff jumped on that right away and was beyond resilient and amazing. You know, they truly understood that, you know, we were going to help every single family. And then oddly enough, that week, we also got notification from the state that we could have closed and we could have served lunch. But too little too late. And we had to plan ahead of time for the betterment of our community. And that was what I was fearful of most, you know, it was always families. And like I said, our staff was resilient, amazing through that. You know, they realized that when they were presenting the lessons that we did a lot of like, continue to go outside, continue to exercise. We're a beach community. So go outside and draw something at the beach or things of that nature. We understood there were so many different stressors going on in those families, and we wanted to not add an extra one by saying you couldn't have food. You know, so we were very cognitive of that. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, that I sent that email out to a lot of the people in the state, and I got a pushback saying, we're taking our spring break, I don't care. And, you know, I look at it this way, we did what was best for us, and guess what? We're getting out a couple of days earlier. You know, so, you know, and think about that. The longer this goes on, which we just physically closed yesterday, the more stress these families have, the more stress that these kids have. They need a break, and we're mindful of that. We're not drowning them all day long at work. You know, we're asynchronous, and we're very flexible and easygoing, but we're mindful of that, too, that these families, come summertime, if this is lifted, they need to be able to go outside and get fresh air. They need to go visit family or whatever it may be that we're allowed to do, whatever the guidelines may be. But, you know, we were looking at the longer goal instead of just the short term.
So when you told me that story, it just resonated with me that, you know, a lot of school districts are going out of their way to make sure kids are fed. But you called upon your staff to be extraordinary, you know. Why do you think, that's going to be the wrong question. What did you draw upon to ask an extraordinary measure from your staff?
What did I draw upon? Where did I get it from? Or rephrase that question for me, buddy.
Where'd you get that from? Where'd that come from?
You know what? I think it's just being, like I mentioned earlier, just being compassionate. You know, each one of us on here is empathetic to our students. Each one of us knows that each student comes through that door, comes from a different family, comes from different heartaches or, you know, amazing things going on in the household that, you know, we're privileged to or not privileged to. But I think at the end of the day, it's true values and morals, as a human being. You know, this is not as, like when this first happened, you know, I was hearing of superintendents requiring their staff and or people that they had to be in the building every single day, right. You know, or they have to do this. And my first thought was, who am I to say that you have to go potentially get a virus that could die? Or who am I to say you're going to bring it home to someone who has health issues? You know, this is much bigger than just me as an administrator or superintendent. This is Glenn Robbins, a human being. You know, and we have an organization to run, and, you know, my people understand that I support them and we challenge them, you know, to keep rising up to the occasion. But we also realize that it's time to be a human being here and be compassionate about that. You know, like I mentioned earlier, there are so many values and beliefs that are being exposed. You know, there's the type A leaders that have to be, that have always great at playing school. And they've always been told what to do. And they're struggling in this. And I feel bad for them, because they think that they have to have an answer. They think that they have to do it the old school way. Let's think about this. How could things change? What are positives that are coming out of this whole lockdown? You know, and that's what I keep continuing to push to my staff. Take what's successful and grow from that. What isn't, don't. But going back to that inner drive, it's just about being a human being, about compassion and empathy. You know, if there was ever time to say compliance can be pushed off to the side a little bit, it's here now. Because if I have to say that, you know, I did this because of fear that somebody might become injured or hurt or you know, potentially in a hospital, what kind of human being are you? You know, we talk about being in education to help kids. And you're supposed to also help out your teachers. You're supposed to help out your parents. You're supposed to help out your community. Think about that. These schools are the forefront and the community center. And if you're not leading that way, how can you expect the rest of the community to?
Yeah, great points, Glenn. Let me give you one of the final questions here. And you're kind of segueing into it, but I just really would love to hear what you have to say. Where do you think we need revolution in education today?
It's a great question. I know you got a bunch of listeners out there saying, blow up the system. And then you got a bunch of listeners saying, no, go back to the textbooks. That's the way it should be. I think that it's constantly evolving. I don't think you can blow up the system. There are just too many cogs in the wheel. And I don't think it needs to be blown up. I just think it needs to be different iterations. I think if you continue to look at it from the way we've all done it, that design thinking. Imagine if we could take everything that's going on in each community and take it through a design thinking process on how we can evolve from where we were as a school district to where we need to go. As a leader, how did you lead throughout this time? Were you getting grievances or were you getting support from everybody? And were you also bringing in all the other figures in town? Because like I mentioned, it's a school community. How are you building as you continue to go forward? How are you getting the insights from not just yourself as a leader and your administrative team and your teachers, but also the kids, also the police, the fire, the public works, the mayor, the city council, your incredible boards that you have? How are you getting that input? And then thinking about it from that point on, what will our schooling look like? Right now, we put together something like an Apollo 13. You got it together. We're taking it back to Earth. We're going to land this thing right before as the year comes to a close. But come September, you know darn well, if we're back in this, and it's very possible that we're going to be back in this, are you ready to launch again SpaceX style? Because, let's be honest, as a leader and as a father, you've gotten past that tinkering. You've gotten past, like, I'm learning. I got the time. And you're going to take time to reflect in the summertime to grow off of that. But come September, you know darn well that every parent is going to say, I want that teacher that was the best one during this whole remote learning or whatever you want to call it. I just call it learning in 2020. Forget all the adjectives. I want that teacher that was, constantly doing various things and, that was totally interactive. And I heard from, multiple times a day or a week, whatever it may be. Versus the other teacher who sent home packets and they had internet connectivity, but how do you evolve from that? So besides that community piece, it's also, I think I want to touch on one other thing. As a leader, this is a conversation that I'm starting to have with our leadership groups in the county, as well as in my own community. Wi-Fi right now, obviously that divide is still there. How to just build up, how do we, bridge that gap? But also what happens when all these things that are being presented for free go away. All these various tools go away. All these, we have Comcast where we are. Right now they're giving it away for free, even for low income. What happens when it goes back to $9 or $10 a month? Who's responsible for paying that bill if you have to do online learning? So those are some bigger questions. The connectivity piece that will continue to drive this no matter where you are in this country, that is huge and essential. And if your leader is not fighting for that, you need to go push that person and say, we need to make sure this gap is somewhat, closed, because there's still, even in New Jersey, way too many students without that connectivity. And if there was ever a push for the community and the school to come together to make that connectivity, it's now. And it's not just to have the beautiful Chromebook to do the work. It's to make a Zoom call or a Google Meet or whatever it is. You're saying, hey, how are you today? Let's have some mindfulness practices and so forth. But as a leader, besides that, how are you budgeting? How are you building when all these great programs go from free to back to money again? And what is it going to be? Are you just going to buy the next thing out of the box because this is the next program I have to have and we're going to model our entire curriculum based off of a company? Or do we build it together as a hybrid? So that's part of the thing. I think this is such a launch pad for here for the betterment if we do it the right way. And if you have a strategic plan out there, push it aside, use it as a guiding point to launch from as well, because guess what? You need to completely revamp it, and we need to go from, this remote or whatever adjectives you want to add and just call it learning right now as we go forward, because it's going to continue to evolve, whether it's a couple months from now, a couple years from now, whatever it is, this is not going away. And guess what? Neither of these parents are saying, look how much my kid has struggled and or grown. And how are you going to fix that going forward? So, sorry, I could keep going for hours, boys, but,
That's all right. we've had the same conversations just recently today in our district about what if we do come back, or stretches of next year? I think probably we're going to have 2 weeks to a month of where we're going to be quarantined again. But what about those families that they're getting a deal right now and on their internet providers? What's going to happen? The other thing for our listeners to think about too, and I don't know when this podcast will go out, but I know we're making a plan right now. The last 2 days of learning for us, it's all based on getting feedback from the kids on how it went.
Great point.
What went well, what did not go well, and how can we improve? Because you're exactly right. SpaceX is going to launch next year, and we better be ready, and we better take the feedback from our biggest stakeholders, which are our kids, and find out how can we make it better. Well, Glenn, it was great to have you on here. And listeners, we just really encourage you to check out who he is. Glenn, why don't you feed them some social media and some other pieces so they can connect with you?
Yeah, so you can reach out to me on Twitter at GlennR1809, GlennR1809. Also on Facebook if you like family pictures for the most part. But also on Instagram, constantly putting Stoic philosophy quotes and so forth. I'm a very big believer in that. That's GlennR1809. And you know, and just something too, launching in a few days, a brand new project, if you want to say, with two buddies of mine besides you guys, is David Colberthouse and David Jakes, and What's Next, the Future of Schools. And that's where we will take a deeper dive into, instead of some, you know, I hate to say that low level, basic level of questioning, we want to really dive deep into what is truly next, almost a revolution in a way, that you guys are doing. With some other, you know, mindfulness people, and reach out to me. I'd love to talk to you. I'd love to grow with you. Love to learn from you, and love to be part of your PLN like I've done with these two incredible people.
Hey, appreciate you, brother. And to all our listeners out there, thank you for checking in. Be safe, be well, be blessed, and be a blessing to someone.
Hey, thanks for listening to our podcast today. We are committed to changing what we do for the betterment of our learners.
I also want to encourage you to check out our book, The Revolution. It's time to empower change in our schools. Make sure you check it out on Amazon, and also check out future or present podcasts that we have within this Revolt Lab. And please feel free to leave some comments or even rate it on iTunes or Android.